Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. Oh, I like this. We're virtually, but we get to head out across Montana. We're going to head to Northwest Montana today, Libby area, right? This is where the state's most important piece of infrastructure is. Well, some would say, and it's celebrating 50 years of service. This is the Libby Dam. Control flooding. It generates power, hydropower, clean power, provides recreation. It's been doing that for over half a century. Going to be joined by members of the Army Corps of Engineers, I should say. Rick Spiger is with us and Tana Wilson. History, hydro, habitat, and what's next down the road? Libby Dam at 50 years today on Voices of Montana. Today, Libby Dam, okay, 50 years in service there at Lake Coconusa. That thing is like 90 miles long, that reservoir. It's beautiful, and the territory up there is beautiful as well. But, you know, what is the balance? We've got this infrastructure, this hydro infrastructure. We understand the needs for power. It's part of the Bonneville Power Administration. I think it's 600 megawatts of power there for eight western states overall with the BPA. Very vital there, too. But recreation and municipal water, those are the things in Montana that we know that we need like 100% of the time. In a lot of ways. So how do you balance those needs? We'll talk about that. Let me introduce Steve Arviscow. You probably know this guy. He worked for the Big Sky Economic Development Corporation for a little while. He's going to be doing some guest hosts. He's trying to retire.
So far it was working out until somebody caught me and said, right. Hey, come on down.
Caught you at a weak moment. So, and I'm thankful too. This will be a fun job for you. I mean, with what you've done with economic development over the past few years as well. And that just touches almost every aspect, every issue in my mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rolls through economic development.
Well, yeah. I'm going to put my toe in the water and especially this issue. And I look forward to just being a little bit part of the show with you today and then here in a week or
yeah,
so.
Next Thursday and Friday.
We're actually going to talk about down the road, we're going to talk about retirement. What is it like in Montana?
I like that. You're going to do a two show series on, you know,
retirement in Montana. Do we really retire?
Yeah. That's a good question. So I'm glad to have you along here. Let's welcome our guests, too, as we get into this. They're celebrating this in Libby on August 23rd at the Visitor Center at 10 a.m., the 50th anniversary of this Libby Dam. Rick Spiger is with us, operations project manager at the Libby Dam. Good morning, Rick. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Got a beautiful view out my window of sunshine and eagles, so everything's great here.
Oh, you know what? We are so happy for you that you got that view, too, and we can imagine it because we've been up there. Steve was up there not that long. Well, maybe it was a while ago.
My daughter lived in Eureka for a couple of years, and so I would head up that way to spend some time with her.
Just love that there. Tana Wilson, Natural Resources Manager. I bet that's a haul to manage our natural resources. Good morning, Tana. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Yeah, you said it. 90-mile-long reservoir, and we've also got the Kootenai River, so we stay pretty busy.
Yeah, I'm thankful you guys are on because that's an area that we love. We want to preserve it, but we also need those natural resources. So balancing that, I think, is what the Army Corps of Engineers has done for so long. But let's start off with Rick Spiger, Operations Project Manager. Tell us about this dam. Tell us about what's so cool about it. Tell us about some of the things that are challenging in managing this property and some of the people you work with.
The people I work with are great. We can just get that out of the way. I have a great staff, about 50 people here as a general rule. We have summer hires that come in and help us with the wreck sites, cleaning up all the time. I've worked at several dams over the years, and this one is really neat because when you sit back and look at it, I mean, it's 400 foot tall. It's got a 310 foot base, and it was built with 7.6 million tons of concrete. So, if you look at engineering wise, which I'm a geeky little engineer anyway, it's a magnificent structural piece of concrete. I mean, it's just gorgeous. So yeah, I mean, we've got five turbines running now. We have one number six going in, and you know, we make about what is it, 1.7 million megawatts of power. You know, about 85 million. So I mean, it's a good gig. I like it.
Yeah, good. And that power is pretty vital to us. I mean, that's been so important from the Bonneville Power Administration. Tana, let's get a sense of you know, what your job is there at the Libby Dam, and some of those challenges that you have in terms of managing that for all those multi-purposes.
Yeah, so I always like to say I work at Libby Dam, but I don't work inside Libby Dam. My job's all outside of the dam. You know, we've got about 190,000 visitors. You could call it 200,000 visitors annually. And those folks come from all walks of life. They're international visitors. We get quite a few Canadian visitors. We share that 42 miles of the reservoir with British Columbia. So we also have our visitor center here. And our visitor center, you know, typically gets about 10,000 visitors that come into the visitor center. And we stay busy. We've got our 25 campsites, four campgrounds, courtesy docks, and lots going on here, and our staff is pretty small. We've got three uniformed staff, including me, and then all together, my staff makes up 10. So most of those folks are outdoor maintenance. Those are your people that are maintaining the grounds, and if you've been out here, you've seen our grounds. They are some of the best core grounds I've ever seen as far as immaculate green grass and clean restrooms, and we really pride ourselves in our outdoor facilities here.
Yeah, and Steve Arbuskow's shaking his head yes, you know, having been there recently, and that's noticeable when you talk about the condition of the property and the campgrounds. You know, that's why you get 200,000 visitors there. Is that just at the visitor center, Tana?
So that's at the visitor center, and then about 4 miles downstream is where all our campgrounds make up from the dam to 4 miles essentially. So that's 200,000 visitors in a small footprint.
So, Rick, what's the day-to-day, you know, what's a day in the life look like for you?
It is so varied. It kind of depends on what happened the day before, or, you know, what I wake up to and find in my inbox in the morning. Normally, it's all about managing contracts and the people and the workload. We've got, you know, five units running. They've been running for 50 years now. The maintenance costs obviously increase as things get older. If you've ever had an old car, you know exactly what I mean. But we're here mainly to keep the public happy, give them a place to camp outdoor. We got, you know, five purposes, you know, flood risk management. Obviously, the dam does that. Mm-hmm. You know, we got a hydropower generation, which Bonneville Power, you know, distributes for us as a government agency. But REC and environmental stewardship is what lets us tie to the community. And I think day to day, the happiest things that we can do is just keep our community informed and keep this place up to snuff and a place that everybody can come and recreate on the weekend.
Hey, Rick, question for you. That kind of work takes a lot of collaboration. There's a lot of players. Maybe you're doing the day to day operation and coordinating that, but who's involved? Who are you collaborating with to be successful in delivering the promise of the Libby Dam and the reservoir?
Bonneville Power is one of our biggest, as all the power the government generates is distributed in the Northwest through Bonneville Power. We meet the demands. Air conditioners go up, heaters go on in the winter. So we have to meet those demands for flow and balance, because all the lines have to be balanced, otherwise electricity won't move. So that's probably one of our biggest players. But, you know, on the REC side, we've got the state of Montana for DEQ, for, you know, for water quality. We're really, really, really cautious about what happens with the water and the fish. The state of Montana DEQ and state fish and wildlife we work with quite a bit. We own the fish hatchery up at Murray Springs, which the state runs for us, so we can raise the little fish and put them back in the water where they're supposed to be. And Forest Service, we work a lot with them because we have a lot of cultural issues, not issues I should say, but a lot of cultural sites that we want to protect for our friends, natives, visitors, whatever we need to do. And, there is a lot of players. There is, and it's a lot of coordinating meetings, but it the Corps does a very good job of balancing it, and it makes it a great place to work.
What about internationally? Is the agreements at a level where day-to-day operations are possible, or are you always looking at paperwork because of the international border?
And there's kind of two different little sections there. One, we do have a treaty with Canada. It's been a very active, good working treaty over these years. We are the only joint dam that was built in cooperation with two countries. Because we do, when we hold water back to not flood the Columbia River, we are basically backing up to Canada. And obviously that raises concerns with them. But it's all been balanced out fairly well over the years. And when it comes to the hydro companies up there, BC Power and stuff, we have a very good working relationship. We balance out extremely well. As far as renegotiating the treaty is where we're kind of at right now, that's handled by the State Department. So luckily, I don't have to do that part.
That's Rick Spiger again, Operations Project Manager at Libby Dam, celebrating 50 years in public service. We'll talk more about some events going on August 23rd for that. Tana Wilson is also with us, Natural Resources Manager. You know, I'm dying to ask a curious question about, you know, how do you make these determinations, whether Rick or Tana answers this one, for flood risk? You know, I'll go to your website, and you guys note real well about what your flows are and how they've decreased over this year. You know, who gives the marching orders, or what are those parameters that determines this flood risk and this flow?
Well, I can take the first stab at that one. The flood risk is managed by Reservoir Control Center, and not only do they monitor what we put out, but they also have to take into concern what the three dams, Duncan, Micah, and Kila dams in Canada can handle in their reservoirs. And we supply about 17% of the water for the Columbia River. So depending if we're having up year or a down year, or depending on what the flows they need for fish survival rates, we have to adjust to that. The calls are not made locally here. They're sitting on a balance system all the way from here to Portland through the river system.
And Tana, why don't you follow up on that? You know, talk about that balance system, because you're dealing with elements. You know, some are generated by policy. Others are generated by Mother Nature. So you probably have to have some flexibility or a good set of parameters that allow you to take some particular moves.
Yeah, and so we have a fish biologist that works here at Libby Dam, and he's involved heavily with the water control reservoir. These are all things that he handles day to day, and mostly what he's following is the Fish and Wildlife Service's biological opinion for sturgeon and bull trout. So those are our two endangered species that we have in the Kootenai River that we manage for. So like you said, it's a balancing act. These things can be difficult because recreation is also important. And in these years that we have lower water levels, lower snowpack, it's really hard. There's a lot of variables at play. You don't know how much rain you're going to get in the spring. So this year, I mean, we're down about 12 feet from full pool right now. Mm. And those things significantly impact, you know, the Canada side of the reservoir. So as you go from the base of the dam and you go down to Canada as you head north, you're going to get more into a river system. It gets a lot more narrow. And some of their boat ramps are then not operational. And, of course, those things matter, and we hear about it. But we also have to keep our minimum flows for bull trout at 7,000 CFS and do a sturgeon pulse in the spring so that the sturgeon can know that it's natural spawning habitat time. So if those water levels don't go up to about 20,000 CFS to 25,000 CFS in the spring for about 6 weeks, then they don't know to naturally spawn. So these things are all factors and big time balancing act.
You know, and that's why I'm so glad you guys are here today, because I think we don't have, we being the general public, but I'll speak for myself, you know, an overall sense of all those challenges and how difficult it can be. And as Steve had noted, there's a lot of collaboration that goes on with that. We're talking about the 50th anniversary of Libby Dam, but also, you know, what that important piece of infrastructure really does, its impact, and over those years across Montana. Rick Spiger is with us, Operations Project Manager. Tana Wilson is Natural Resource Manager for the Libby Dam there. Want to remind you, August 6th, we're heading off to the High Line. Yes, there's some dams up there as well, but that's on the other side. This is the Seattle District that we're talking about here. But we are going to be for the Farmers Tour, and we're looking forward to this. Northern Ag Network, Northern News Network, going to do a live broadcast from the Northern Ag Research Center at 9 o'clock And then we're going to hit the road and go around to some of these producers and just give them our thanks. A little lunch, maybe some beverages, you know, a lot of gratitude too. So that's happening, and you guys are invited because we're going to have kind of like a public social is what we're going to call it at the Highway Bar at 5. That starts at 5 o'clock. So look forward to seeing you guys out there with us here. Kane, Steve Arviscow is in studio. He'll be guest hosting next week. Rick Spiger is with us and also Tana Wilson from the Libby Dam. And thank you guys for coming on too. Rick, I'm going to go to you and we'll go back to this 50 years. I don't know. You've probably been there a little while. I guess I don't know how long. But, you know, the history of this dam, you talked about it being a beautiful structure. But let's go into, you know, over 50 years, what have been some of the lessons that you have learned from Libby Dam?
You know, I think one of the lessons we learned is, one, we're a lot smarter than we used to be. When we first started this, you know, it was authorized by the Flood Control Act in 1950. You know, it took 66 to 72, it was construction years, and about $486 million, which I guarantee we could have put a B behind it if we had to do it again. Mm. But our biggest thing is, it's estimated that, you know, we prevent about $234 million in flood damage a year. Like I said, we provide a lot of water to the Columbia River if we just open it up, and it was a high water year. Portland used to flood on a regular basis. Bonner's Ferry is probably the lowest point of our river, and they receive significant damage, which only happens that we have a problem about once every 20, 25 years now. So we've learned to manage the water. As endangered species are found and developed and or become on the list, we adapt to what we need to do for that also. And obviously, we're going more electric in the United States, you know, with all our solar and wind and changing over the heat pumps and everything like that instead of burning fossil fuels. So hydropower generation is coming up and trying to keep balance between what we need to do for the environment and the First American People sites and what we need to do to keep people warm. We're getting a lot smarter on that over the years. And obviously technology has done a wonderful thing, allow us to increase more power with less. So over the years, we've gotten a lot smarter.
Oh, that's good to hear.
It's a great thing.
Well, Rick, Tana, I want to say this because I had a decade plus in water resource management in Colorado. And in all the Western United States, water is so critical. And I think we take for granted this important infrastructure that was put in place in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s that we now benefit from today. You guys do an amazing job of balancing so many interests, sustaining that infrastructure over time. It has to last for 200 years. And so thank you. That's just such great work, and it impacts Montana communities, and we don't even think about it on a day-to-day basis. Yeah. So thank you for the work that you do. One of the things that I think you have to balance, help me understand a little bit more, but downstream of that dam, not only do you have habitat for endangered fish, you've got anglers that love the flow to be at a certain level. I know I'm one of those. But you also have downstream water rights. Maybe talk a little bit more about what happens downstream of that dam as it relates to other water rights and other interests.
I was just going to add, you know, a big part of working smarter, too, over time is Libby Dam was one of the last dams built by the Army Corps of Engineers. You know, it finished in 72. But we were also one of the first dams, so the last dam, but the first dam to put in the selective withdrawal system. Mm. So that selective withdrawal system is the ability for us to control the temperature of water we send downstream. And that's vital for fish. So that is really key in how we maintain the temperature. But we can also help maintain the temperature of the Columbia River system, too. So these temperatures, as they rise in the summer months and things don't cool off at night, having these dams in place have been really critical to keeping those temperatures and avoiding those hoodow restrictions that you might find on rivers that don't have dams, for example.
So to understand that, please correct me, then you're drawing water from lower in the reservoir at a cooler temperature and sending it. Is that how that works?
Yep, that's correct. So we actually have a small crane that moves gates, and obviously the lower you go, the colder the temperature. And other dams, since Libby Dam has proved to be successful, have since retrofitted selective withdrawal systems that don't require a crane to physically move them. They have a computer system in place, and they can move it. So there's just some differences in technology, but that was one exciting innovation that we were doing in the 70s.
Wow. And that, you know, strikes an interest in me. To follow up, you know, over those 50 years, you used technology, you know, 50 years ago. And now you've got five decades of new technology. How do you incorporate that? Because it's really hard to get down in there and make any concrete changes, so to speak. What does new technology do for you in terms of helping you manage all those resources?
Well, it's all about efficiency. The basic idea of a dam and a hydropower system has been around. I mean, early 1900s, I mean, we've got stream systems up all over the world and stuff. So the knowledge is there. We take a heavy piece of water, we hit a thing, we make it spin, we make electricity. That's what it's for. But what it does is the efficiency of what we do. I think it is 2030 that we are going to update our runners and our turbines so they're more environmentally safe. We have very little impact with what we have here. Other systems can be a little destructive on fish, and we're changing them out to what they call fish friendly, so we don't have an issue with the environment. So, but they also make it more efficient. We're going to make more water, more dollars per water gallon. Is the biggest way to say it. So it's interesting because it's let us refine what we have and not just run with that same old base theory. And it's nice because hydropower is the one thing. When we pass a gallon of water here, it goes through 17 other dams making power. And they have no impact with anything, you know, that's destructive on the soil other than, you know, a 300-foot drop. So it's a wonderful system. Technologies allow us to refine it and be more efficient and more friendly to the environment.
Yeah, I having been in this business many years ago, there's always a little bit of talk or controversy about dams, and you've seen some dams taken down in certain stretches of the river in the West. And think about the functionality and the value proposition in the Libby Dam and other kind of key dams and reservoirs in the West. It is absolutely tremendous. It's providing municipal water, it's irrigating crops, some food that we eat, it's providing managing habitat better for fish. There's so many values in that, and you've been providing that value for now 50 years. And Tom, I think when we come back, we want to tell us about the celebration, how people can get engaged with that. But wow, what a great piece of infrastructure in our state.
Appreciate you joining us here all across the state. Hello to our friends in Kalispell. See you up there next week. KOFI, 1180 AM, Big Stick, 104.3 FM. Hello to our friends, too, in Plentywood, Montana, KATQ. Good to have you along. Kalispell's west side, Plentywood on the east side. Plentywood is, probably part of the St. Paul district. We look at these Army Corps of Engineer districts. So the Northwestern Division has five districts. The South Pacific Division, four different districts. There's a lot of different core districts. We're speaking with members of, Army Corps of Engineer officials who are from the Seattle district there. And we're talking about Libby Dam, its 50th anniversary. Rick Spiger is with us here and Tana Wilson. Rick's the project manager, operations project manager, I should say, and natural resources manager is Tana Wilson. Steve Arviscal also in studio. Rick, we were talking kind of offline, but we got to get this information out there. You said it earlier, and I queried a little more about it. You have a new turbine going in. So you have five turbines, and I think it's fascinating to me to think that, of our dam system, there's still a little more capacity that we can reach to.
There is. We were originally designed for eight turbines, and part of that was a re-regulation dam further down the stream to kind of buffer the water if we have that much running so it doesn't invade Bonner's Ferry with hard impact. That was never authorized by Congress. It was mentioned, but it was never authorized, so we were limited on the number of units we could put in. But as we go through the years and these things need to be overhauled, we're putting number six in, so as we have one down for a major overhaul for the fish-friendly turbines and things like that, we will still be able to meet our needs with the additional turbine.
What's that like, adding – it's designed for that, but you know, what's it like putting that in place?
Well, the nice part is about half of it was assembled. So we have three units where the parts sitting here. It's fascinating because it's like putting together a 20,000-piece jigsaw puzzle. We've got more parts than we need to dig through, and we have a contractor out here assembling them for us. We'll go in and open up the bulkheads. The draft tubes are welded shut. We'll have to cut those out, and we'll get it online. And it's, as far as I know, it's the first one we've put online in addition in a long time. So for us, it's a big thrill.
Yeah, a big job at that. Tana Wilson, I'm gonna have you talk a little bit about this 50th celebration, because you talked about the visitor center, 200,000 visitors a year there. Are you going to be able to give dam tours how are you guys going to just let the public know that you're doing the work that they need done?
Yeah, so there's a lot of construction work going on, but we are still managing to keep our tour program alive. So we offer tours of the powerhouse on Sunday. Sunday's the only day that there's not active work going on in the generators. So Sunday tours are at 10 a.m., noon, 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. So Sunday's only for powerhouse, but the rest of the week we offer tours at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m., and those are top of the dam to the Treaty Tower. On the day of the 50th, we are opening our dam, the top of the dam, to foot traffic only. So this will be the first time that the gate has been open and has allowed folks to go walk leisurely at their own pace, bring their phones, take pictures, enjoy the view, really, from that vantage point since 9/11. Prior to 9/11, the dam was open to drive across, but because of Department of Defense and some security risks, we had to close it. So tours are typically guided, and they require a photo ID. This year, no photo ID for Saturday, August 23rd. So this is an exciting thing for the community, and we're really looking forward to having a lot of folks that are going to come out and take advantage of that opportunity to see the dam and just take in the view.
Steve has already asked this question, but how's the fishing going to be on August 23rd?
Yeah.
Well, Tom, have you been inside of a dam?
I've not.
You can actually tour, you can go in a dam, right? Am I right, guys? You can walk through the dam. There's all this internal infrastructure that helps maintain that structure. Am I right? Correct. Rick, correct me if I've got that wrong, but I've been through in a few dams. And what's really mysterious about that is you're standing there and there's, I don't know how many tens or thousands of cubic feet of water on the other side of that piece of concrete. And you see these little seeps and things. It's just part of the structure of a dam. So if you haven't engaged with that structure, Don, I would just encourage you, if you're hearing us on the Voices of Montana and you're close to Libby, go see that dam. It's such an amazing piece of infrastructure. Tom, you should go, and you should have them take you into that. And I don't know if everybody can do that, but into the dam. It is an amazing piece of work.
We plan trips like this all the time, so I'm definitely up for that. What will I see? Tana, Rick, what will I see if I tour this dam?
I'll take the inside part. The nice part about that is, seeing how we had the extra units that were partially assembled, we have unit number 8 down there. It's kind of set up not as – it's open to the public to see on through the tours. I'd love to turn it into a big display, but it actually has, you know, potential value. So,
right, yeah.
But you can go in. You can see the workings of that unit, which very, very few places can actually show you what it looks like on the inside. And the supporting equipment to run it with the cooling water – the pumps, the oil, and everything, it's just a massive electrical and mechanical wonder in my mind. The top of the dam, I'll let Tana handle that. That's more her with the Treaty Tower and stuff.
So the top of the dam is really the awe factor of you're looking down and into the valley, you're seeing the Kootenai River, you're looking behind, you're seeing, you know, not quite 90 miles, but you're seeing a lot of water that goes a long way. You can see Yarnell Island. It's pretty scenic. You'll also see the selective withdrawal system. And as you make your way across, you'll get to the Treaty Tower, where you'll see Paul Theory's design that he designed for the Treaty Tower sculpture. So that was part of a contest. And, it, you know, these are all really neat things about the dam that you have to take the tour. You got to learn. You got to see it to really understand what we're saying.
Well, I'm excited about that as well. And I hope people show up for this, too. The 50th celebration starts at 10 o'clock. Again, it's at the Libby Dam Visitor Center, August 23rd. I've got a call from a public official in Libby earlier, just wanting to know, there's maybe some potential cuts in the budget, so to speak. How will that affect Libby Dam? Will it affect the Visitor Center? Because as I understand, the Visitor Center is free, right?
That is correct. As far as the budget cuts, our budgets are figured out 3 years ahead of time. We're already working, 3 years ahead of time to see where we are. And it honestly is kind of a forecast of where we've been. We're pretty steady. We have not lost any people or anything like that. We're still doing exactly what we're supposed to do. But it's an expensive place to run. $2.6 million come from Congress and $11.5 million come from Bonneville Power to keep this place running. So money is vitally important. We are very lucky here that we have not been part of any of the big cuts or anything like that, but we have a mission to do, and I think it's recognized that it's important.
I got to ask this question because, as we talk about recreation, there's been some concern about selenium contamination from some Canadian mining operations there. I know the state legislature has looked at this as well. What can you tell me about that? Is it negatively impacting the reproductive health or survival in any way?
Studies do show that there is an impact on the selenium. It is not my area of expertise. I'll tell you that right now. We have a fish biologist that works on it. The Corps has an interesting job. We have monitors in the river that collect and report data for temperatures and flows, selenium, silting of the dam, things like that. And we give that information to any agency that would like it. The core itself, that is not our mission. We are milk construction and flood control. We give it to agencies that can use that and hopefully help us out in that situation.
Understood. I'm going to let you guys go here. I got 4 minutes or so. So I'm going to, it's just sort of a esoteric question for you, Tana Wilson, a natural resources manager. It's twofold. What keeps you up at night? But also what gets you out of the bed in the morning? What are some of the challenges but also what are some of those things that you love to do in your job there at Libby Dam?
Oh, so I'm pretty fortunate. I've got a job that doesn't really keep me up at night. The only things that can keep me up at night are if anything is going on with the public, if I've got anything in campgrounds when it comes to safety. But for the most part, what keeps me going is a lot of these environmental stewardship projects that we get to do and special events like the 50th. These are unique things, snapshots in time, and it's just an exciting thing to be a part of. Being a part of the 50th is not something that every employee at Libby Dam is going to be a part of. This is a snapshot in time. So I'm really looking forward to having folks here for our 10 a.m. open house of the dam. We're going to have a ceremony that starts with a land acknowledgement and then also includes an unveiling of the 12 names of the folks that died during the construction of Libby Dam. And then it's just going to be a good time with food vendors and partners from the community with information booths and opportunities to go see the Treaty Tower and walk across the dam and just visit with folks. We're expecting, upwards of 500 people. So it's going to be a good day. And those are the things that keep me going and keep me excited about the work I get to do.
That's cool. I think Lincoln County is going to show up there as well. Rick, same question for you. Okay. And it's not like I'm trying to pry into anything, but it's just to get an understanding of the challenges that you have. What keeps you up at night? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
Aging infrastructure is probably the one thing that keeps me up. We have a mission to do environmentally and with hydropower and making electricity. Anything that throws those off, a broken part can be awful hard to get nowadays. Most of our stuff is, believe it or not, fairly antiquated, and it's a major involvement to get new parts designed. So that keeps me up at night. But the part that keeps me coming to work, right down here at the end of the spillway, we have a boat launch. Every day I watch the fly fishers get in there and the floaters get in the water, and they, in a great mood, they're getting ready to go out in the sunshine and play on the water all day. And every day I go for a walk, there's three or four dogs out there playing in the water at the little picnic area with the people. And I got to scratch the dogs and talk to the people every day. And that's the part of this job that's great.
Oh, that's good to hear. You know what? Bill Witsit has called in, a gentleman who's also a guest host on this program. And I'm going to respect this. We got just a couple of minutes, Bill, but I know you've probably got a fabulous question that we all need to hear the answer on. So you're on the air here. Good morning, sir.
Okay, great. Hey, thanks. Great program, guys. Hard to believe it was so long ago that I interviewed Richard Nixon at the dedication of
Liberty. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow.
Fantastic.
Yeah, got a photo of it, too. Hey, quick question. How are we doing with the coordination of water levels and power production among dams like Salus, Kasanka, Kalispell, and, you know, others that are having problems keeping dam levels up? For water levels.
As far as Libby itself is concerned, it's a year-to-year venture, I'll tell you that.
Oh, yeah.
I can remember, this is one of the lowest water years we've had. And we're going to be 12 to 14 people low, but we also got 5 million acre feet behind us. You know, so we're doing our job of holding water for all our authorized purposes. The other dams, I really can't speak to, believe it or not, I'm solely focused on this one. But so far we can manage year to year.
Great. Thank you.
You're going to be there, Bill? Can you make it?
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Good. That'll be.
Well, you're invited. We have cake.
And you actually interviewed Richard Nixon. Tell us about that story.
Yeah, he was there
history.
For the dedication, you know, and so I interviewed him on the dam. We were up top on the dam.
Wow. How about that, Rick, Tana? A little bit of history there.
There is, and the one part they kind of missed, yeah, talking to Richard Nixon would have been absolutely fascinating. As they did that dedication, it was a little bit slowed, so they were trying to release that final bucket of concrete in the dam to show it finished. It got delayed so long with his flight that they had a heck of a time opening it up. And there's a picture up in the Treaty Tower of him struggling with a rope and about five other people, dignitaries, trying to open this thing for the final show. So not everything works perfectly, but we got her done.
Bill, thanks for that call. Thanks for sharing that.
You bet. Yeah. Take care.
Yeah. And Rick and Tana, thank you guys for the work you do. As we've noted, it's those things that kind of go unrecognized an awful lot. But that is a reward in and of itself,
Yeah, thank you. That's a great piece of infrastructure. It's so meaningful to so many people, and we admire and appreciate your dedication. And have a great 50th anniversary.
Yeah, thank you, and we hope the listeners today will join us Saturday, August 23rd.
I now understand why it's the fastest hour in radio.
Right? Yes. Yeah. And it was fun. It was a fun hour. Thank you guys for sharing that with us. Appreciate
You're more
that.
More than welcome.
Yep. Yeah. And I'm going to bug you for some pictures of that celebration here, too. And we'll continue to report on it. Yep. Rick Spiger and Tana Wilson, thank you guys. And thanks to Nicole for helping to set this up as well. Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.